What's going on, my fellow Halloween Hobbit hotties? Welcome to episode 23, the Halloween episode of the Warp Reality Podcast. On this episode, we talk about mirrors, we talk about UFOs, we talk about alien abductions, the Mongolian Deathworm, and all of your favorite segments, including horrible reviews with Edgegrave Dave and Chris Whitehouse of the White House Investigation Team. So let's get spooky.
Do aliens exist, and are they among us? Are weird creatures lurking in the darkness? Do evil entities hide in the shadows of your bedroom while you sleep? Join us as we explore all this and more on the Warped Reality Podcast.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? How's it going? My name is Ghost Joe, and welcome to episode 23, the Halloween episode of the Warped Reality Podcast. I hope you guys are enjoying the Halloween festivities. I, on the other hand, on Halloween, will be working all day, but hopefully I'll get home in time for a little bit of trick-or-treating with my girls. So a few things are going on. Of course, all haunted house stuff is in full effect at the moment, and I wish I could have attended something, but my job doesn't allow me to have any fun on or off duty, so it kind of sucks. But if you're in the New York area, you should really go check out the Kreischer Mansion in Staten Island, New York. It's a real haunted house with a lot of events all year round, and it's been featured on a few shows like Paranormal Lockdown, Jack Osborne's Portal to Hell, and even the Dr. Oz Show. Check out my last episode, episode 22, to hear all about it when I interview myself and my dad, actually, interview the caretaker slash manager of the Kreischer Mansion, Rick Rispoli. He talks about a ton of stories, a ton of history about the place, and it's just super interesting. You could also check it out on my YouTube channel. Just search for Ghost Joe or check the links in the show notes. So I've also been a guest on a few podcasts recently as well. So I'd love for you to check the episodes that I was on, plus all their episodes as well. One of which was called Paranoia Radio Podcast with Trebles Garcia and Big Tank. And my new friend, also an excellent contributor, Chris Whitehouse, has a new YouTube channel called Talking Paranormal, where he does interviews and stuff with some interesting people. So I don't know why he interviewed me, but yeah, I was up there too. So that was great, great fun. I enjoyed talking to everybody, and I have a few more podcast appearances that should be coming up in the near future as well, as long as time could finally get on my side here and there. So again, all the links will be in the description, and let's get into this week's show. So when you look at your reflection in the mirror, what do you see? Have you ever looked and gotten an uneasy feeling, almost as if the reflection staring back at you may not be you at all? Maybe you've walked past a mirror in your room and glanced out of the corner of your eye and realized that the reflection wasn't matching yours. In this segment, we're going to talk about the different theories of the paranormal concept of mirrors and some lore behind them. So in the Chinese culture, it is bad feng shui, I don't think I said that correctly, to sleep with a mirror in your bedroom at all. It's said that if a mirror is in your bedroom, dark spirits can use it as a portal or can steal your soul, leaving you feeling, well, soulless. It's also said that having a mirror in your bedroom doubles whichever luck you're having, good or bad. But if it's facing your bed, it doubles your luck in misfortune. Many people to this day still cover their mirrors at night. Another superstition is that you must cover a mirror in a newly deceased person's room because their souls can be trapped and evil spirits can take them. Many different religions and cultures have their own take on mirrors, being doorways or portals to the spirit realm, as well as possible other dimensions. Scrying is a practice that some mediums and fortune tellers use to do their thing, and of course, never ever face two mirrors together. That may open a spiritual superhighway for spirits and demons to either pass over into the opposite mirror or possibly even make a detour in your house and hang out for a while. Do you happen to have a story about a mirror that might have made you feel uncomfortable or any kind of paranormal activity with it? Please let me know. give me a call at 845-600-0744 or email me at ghostjoeny@gmail.com. Every time I think about and talk about this stuff, it reminds me of this YouTube thing that I saw many, many years ago of a Japanese girl standing next to a mirror. And she's just standing there and you see her reflection, and then her reflection turns and looks at her out of like this real creepy look. And it's giving me chills just thinking about it. And plus the movie Us also has freaked me out with that as well. So yeah, if you have any mirror stories or any kind of paranormal stories, give me a call. Let me know. So now let's talk some out of this world news, shall we? In the small town of Harrington, Lincoln County, Washington, amongst its 430 residents, lives a 74-year-old man named Peter Davenport. Mr. Davenport has never been married, nor does he have any children. But what he does have is over 180,000 logged UFO sighting reports in his database. For the past 28 years, he's been working 7 days a week running the National UFO Reporting Center. His fascination began in 1954 when he was 6 years old. He and his family had been enjoying a drive-in movie when there was a huge disturbance that sent people running and screaming. He looked over and saw this extremely bright light in the shape of a rugby ball. I don't know what a rugby ball is. It rose up and dropped down behind the movie screen before it took off into the sky. Being the sole employee of this company isn't without its annoyances, as Peter claims that between 10 to 80% of his daily calls are crank phone calls. But in July, Washington was proclaimed as the number one hotspot for spotting UFOs, as the state nearly doubles the national average. Mr. Davenport is also a very well-educated man. He has bachelor's degrees in biology and Russian from Stanford University and master's degrees in fisheries and business administration from the University of Washington. He was one of the founders of a Seattle biotech company and sold his stock in 1995. The money was helpful in running his low-budget site, he says, which he estimates costs $250 to $500 a month. See, Davenport used to live in Seattle, but in 2006, he ended up in Harrington, and he bought a Cold War-era nuclear missile silo that he bought for $100,000 because he always wanted one. And that's where he has his database of everything. Mainly, it has very few paper files in there. Everything is stored on his computer, but and it's not like it's crazy, like really, you know, high definition pictures and videos and stuff like that. Most of it is just descriptions that people have given him, or possibly even some very, very poor drawings that, you know, people have seen things and they send it into him. So here's one of the stories. In December 29th, 1994, near La Crosse in Whitman County, a mother and six of her children were driving, driving northwest on Zarin Cutoff Road when the children spotted bright lights to the right side. There were three seemingly identical black delta-shaped ships with a very bright yellow or white headlight on the front, which was scanning the ground ahead, and below them, as they flew across the road at an estimated speed of approximately 5 miles per hour. After the objects had crossed the road, passing directly over the car, they turned south and continued moving in that direction. Davenport says that he talked to the mother on the phone. He could hear her children in the background blurting out corrections. It was a wonderful form of confirmation, he said, that the kids had actually seen it as well. So, if there's something strange flying over your neighborhood, you know who you're going to call, Mr. Peter Davenport. All right, so now let's get into this very, very interesting alien abduction case that I just read up about. And I'm going to try and find out if I could get in touch with this lady so I could actually have a proper interview with her. But let's hear about her story first. So have you guys ever heard of the alien abduction of Miss Linda Napolitano? The story goes like this. In November 1989, a young wife wakes up around 3:15 a.m. And it's that witching hour time again, to find three gray beings floating over her while she's laying in her bed. She was in a paralyzed state and couldn't even call out to her husband, who was sleeping right next to her. As the beings told her to stay quiet using their language, she had then felt a blue beam pulling her out of her window of her apartment, which was on the 12th floor of a Manhattan residence. Three alien figures were with her in the light, and they floated above her building and into a UFO. Once inside the craft, Linda remembers seeing benches, sliding doors, long hallways, and an operating table, which the beings had laid her on. They performed many experiments on her, some of which she passed out during. One alien put something in her nasal cavity, which caused her excruciating pain. Now, to most of us paranormal junkies, it sounds like a case of sleep paralysis. But here's the kicker. There were 23 witnesses that saw Linda floating with the beings to the ship. Two of the most credible witnesses were two security detail officers who were protecting a foreign dignitary. They had seen the whole spectacle. One of the officers screamed that they had to help her, but for some reason, their car doors couldn't open. That officer eventually had a nervous breakdown from the guilt of not being able to help her. Later on, Linda went to a doctor and gave birth to a half-human, half-alien. No, I'm just kidding with that one. But she did go to the doctor, and after some tests, they found something foreign was lodged in her nasal cavity. There is a lot of skepticism around this encounter, as they can't find the two security officers to corroborate the story after it being relayed through an author and UFOologist, Bud Hopkins, after he had received a letter from Richard and Dan, the two security guards. What do you guys think? Have you ever had an alien abduction experience? Let me know about it. You know the number, 845-600-0744. I'm waiting for the call. All right, so I'm sure you guys are pretty tired of hearing me speak by this point. So let's check in with Edgegrave Dave with his horrible review of the original Halloween movie. Let's go.
Horrible review with Edgegrave Dave.
Ah, fall is in the air. The smell of crushed leaves, pumpkin pie, or coffee, beer, and other variety of beverages. And of course, horror. It's the most wonderful time of the year, and it's here. Nothing embodies the Halloween season more than the classic knife-wielding maniac itself. None other than the boogeyman, Michael Myers, and also as he is known, The Shape. It's so exciting. We're getting the final installment of... Did I just say final? Final is a term that I do take with a grain of salt in these legendary franchises, but final movie of the franchise called Halloween Ends. And I thought I would take this opportunity to discuss the original foundation of the modern cinematic slasher subgenre itself, John Carpenter's Halloween, 1978. It is at this time that I give my grave warning. There will be spoilers, so you have been forewarned. There will be spoilers. For those who cherish this movie as much as I do, you know this classic movie changed Halloween for you forever the second you heard the piano during the opening credits. For those getting their first frights into these films, welcome, fellow gravediggers. You know, it's hard not to get confused by the chronological order spanning a whopping 44 years. I even found the map on the internet that gives you every combination of the order to watch these movies in their timelines, going into the chronological order by release date, the H20 timeline, the H40 timeline, even a reboot timeline. But they all have one thing in common, the original Halloween, which came out in 1978, written and directed by John Carpenter. Also, Deborah Hill did co-write the screenplay, music by John Carpenter, and starring Jamie Lee Curtis in her debut film role, Donald Pleasance, who was a veteran actor at the time of this movie, PJ Soul, Nancy Keyes, and the silent Shape himself, Michael Myers, played by Nick Castle. One of the brilliant things this movie did was scare you where your imagination would fill in the blanks with little to no gore. Something unheard of at the time. independent film producer Irwin Yablans remembered a time like this, listening to the radio as a child and being scared under the covers, with the radio filling in those blanks. He brought this concept to John Carpenter and had a very simple overall plot of an escaped mental patient who stalks a babysitter on Halloween night, popping up in all those famous scenes with the piano score under it, the classroom, walking down the street, and of course the finale in the house at the end, while his psychiatrist Dr. Loomis pursues him as he understands he is purely and simply evil, after the young boy Michael Myers of only 6 years old was under his care after murdering his sister. The white mask, coveralls, and heavy breathing with that chilly soundtrack really worked well with each other. The deaths all have a frightening jump scare element, but again, do not rely on blood to scare you, though the murders are seen in each scene. One of my favorite things that this movie does is switch back and forth from the Dr. Loomis parts to Michael and Laurie scenes. And this is done very well in a solid pace until they do meet up with each other in the final act. It's also interesting that they did film this on a shoestring budget of about $300,000 and made almost $70 million in its original run. The music alone is a great example of how to use the audience's emotions to invoke their feelings of fear. The success of this film created countless sequels and timelines, as stated earlier, that influenced a whole genre. And what a reward. We got films like Friday the 13th and A Nightmare on Elm Street, and it rejuvenated the entire subgenre. And each of these slashers offered a different dimension as the 80s rolled on years later. I give this original movie a high five graves. And for those newer to scary movies, I think you'll especially enjoy it, as it's a great entry-level film. Now, one more thing that I did want to add, which I do find interesting, is when I had first rented this movie from the video store as a teen, there were actually added scenes. Now, these extra scenes weren't uncommon back in the day, as a lot of films were actually edited highly for television, a lot of rated R movies, to edit things like nudity, gore, language, violence. The version that I actually saw had a couple of extra Dr. Loomis sanitarium scenes, which I found very interesting. Scenes with Michael, things like that. Now, they don't add a whole lot to the movie, but it's just a little bit of extra substance. So the version that I actually had seen was the television extended version. So if you happen to catch that, it's really not bad. It's a little something that's interesting. So go ahead and check out Halloween. Now back to you, Ghost Joe.
Thank you so much, Ed Grave. I appreciate your awesome, awesome review, and I hope everybody else does as well. Yeah, so I know I am no longer the horrible reviews reviewer, but, you know, I don't know if many of you guys know this, but I actually record my podcast a lot of times in pieces because, you know, I have tons of hours and it takes me a little while. I might do 10 minutes here, 10 minutes there. And so I had recently, the last couple of days, I had watched Smile. And I'm not going to give a review on that. I'll leave that for Edgegrave Dave. But I really, really enjoyed it, actually. I thought it was a good movie. It had a lot of, it had some of the newish horror movie stuff to it, which, you know, I guess you got to expect that. But it did have quite a good creep factor. Very, very creepy in some parts. So I definitely enjoyed it. Very, very cool movie. And yeah, so I'm looking forward to Edgegrave Dave's review on that as well. But yeah, definitely go see that. It's pretty good. So right now we're going to delve into one of my favorite subjects to talk about. It actually leaves a lot of people very uneasy and uncomfortable talking about this, but hey, let's do it anyway. Let's talk about one of the happier subjects in a paranormal podcast, demonic possessions and exorcisms. So we've talked about modern day exorcisms before and how they're still going on consistently, either by trained professionals or by people that don't understand what the hell they're doing. In 2019, the Vatican called upon 250 of their MVP, I believe bishops, to come down there and have exorcism training. Many people that try to do exorcisms that are not sanctioned by the church end up starving the supposed possessed or torturing them, all in the name of the Lord. I believe demonic possession can happen, but there is a fine line between the symptoms of that and mental illness. A very convincing demonic possession account happened to that of 16-year-old South African girl Clara Germana Selle. In August 1906, nuns at the orphanage where Selle resided claimed that she was ripping at her clothes, growling, and behaving erratically. She had demanded to speak with Father Erasmus Horner and had confessed to him that she made a pact with Satan himself. The nuns claimed her skin burned when doused with holy water, that she had adult-like strength and was speaking different foreign languages that she had never learned. When Father Horner and Reverend Mazzuti reported to their superiors that she had levitated, they received permission to conduct an exorcism. Well, I would hope so. According to accounts of the exorcism published in the 1930s, the ritual lasted two full days. Erasmus and Mazzuti began their ritual cleansing at dawn of September 11th, 1906, and went late into the night. Father Erasmus and his nuns allegedly claimed she had once transformed into a serpent and bitten one of the women trying to help her. Later, they had said that Selle had attempted to strangle one of the priests during this time and knocked the Bible out of his hands. They administered their religious rites again the following morning, at which point the demon vacated the girl's body and forced her to levitate one last time. According to accounts, 170 people were present to witness Clara Germana Selle's possession and real-life exorcism. Beat that, Linda Blair. All right, now it's time for I Read It on Reddit. And this one comes to us by Creepy Short Thing. So this one's entitled Scary True Encounter with Evil. This happened to my sister and I when I was 7 or 8. My sister is 2 years younger than me. Now we live in Australia, so basements aren't a thing. But sometimes really old houses might have a wine cellar. The house we lived in was built in the 1940s, maybe even earlier. It was an old brick house with a strange layout. The rooms just felt off to me. Like the flow of the house felt wrong, and even the rooms felt like they were in the wrong spots. We had a wine cellar underneath the house, which we accessed through the backyard. One section was open. The west side had a wall which was built with the bricks with holes in them, so light would filter through during the daytime. The rest of the cellar was like a big underground room or rooms you could stand up in and walk further into the adjoining room on the cellar, which led to the smaller opening into the brick wall, which an adult could crawl through. Once in here, it led to each individual room under the house. This was so any electrical problems could be fixed. Also, the inside floors were heated, which was great in the winter. Yes, it does get cold in Australia in the winter. This house was always cold and made me feel uncomfortable and scared as soon as the sun would go down. My sister and I have experienced a few things in this house, as well as my dad. However, this particular incident was absolutely terrifying. My sister and I were playing in our cellar with our dog. We looked up, and in a darker area of the cellar stood a figure. It was a male, and he was looking at us, not saying anything. Now, I can't speak for my sister, but I had the most overwhelming sense of fear and absolute dread fill my body. My chest was tight, and I was frozen with fear. We knew what we were looking at was evil and not human. The figure looked at us. He started to walk further into the darkness in the cellar, then turned back to look at us again. He moved his head as if he was trying to beckon us to follow him. He gave us a terrifying grin as he looked at us. I was so afraid. We knew it was evil. We could feel the heaviness of his presence in the cellar. I'm not sure how long we stood there for. I just wanted it to be over. Then my little sister grabbed me, and we ran out of there and up the footpath, back into our house, screaming and crying to Mom and Dad, telling them what had happened. I remember Dad running out there to look around, but he found nothing. I still have nightmares about that house, like I'm trapped. It was one of the most terrifying things I've ever experienced. I also never went back into that cellar again. So that was a little short one, but definitely terrifying if you put yourself in those shoes. I definitely would not want to hang out in that cellar ever again, definitely after seeing that. So yeah, there you have it, everybody. I read it on Reddit. By the way, if you guys have lived in a haunted house or you live in a haunted house right now and you'd love to share your stories, listen, guys, the reason why I got started in podcasting was because I love hearing other people's paranormal experiences. So please do not hesitate to give me a call at 845-600-0744 and leave me a message. You could also email me your story as well. You can do it anonymously. Let me know, you know, you would like to remain anonymous. That's all good. I'm not here to cast judgment on anybody. That's the least thing I want to do. I just love to hear people's stories, and I'd love to hear, I'd love for you to have an outlet to share your stories where you're not going to be ridiculed and berated and holes poked through everything. So yeah, definitely give me a call. Send me an email, ghostjoeny@gmail.com. But now we are off to one of my favorite segments with good old Chris Whitehouse and the White House Investigation Team. Take it away, Chris.
Hello, it's Chris. This week, after talking about things like protection, Ouija boards, stuff like that, I want to talk about the spirits that we've met, and in particular, when we've been to private houses. A private house visit is one of my favourite things because you're not in a many investigated location that gets completely over investigated. You know, you're welcomed into somebody's private home, and that's their private family, or just a very seldom talked to spirit. And that really appeals. It's something that few would get to witness. But in many a case, a frightened family will contact us, and they'll say activity started small and got bigger until we were called in. And upon finding out who the ghost is, it will either be an ex-tenant, homeowner, who doesn't like the way family's doing a certain thing. They always like, we had one that always wanted a window open. We had one that wanted a Jewish Star of David putting up. And that's what I want to really talk about, the compromises, which is so often the case. We don't go into an investigation, find out who's haunting it and say, right, we're pushing you out. It's not our right to do that. We're not bullies. We'll go in and say, look, this family's living here now, or your descendants are scared by what you're doing. Please turn it down. You're scaring the kids and you don't want that, do you? These are your descendants. So we'll compromise and we'll say, what can the family do? Maybe flowers or a plaque or a teddy bear, something in the location that will show their respect and memory of you. So the compromise is made, and it's such a wonderful thing when the activity calms down, the family's happy, and the spirit gets something in their honour put in the house. Yeah, it's just that's what spirits want a lot of the time. They want to be noticed because they've got something to say. You know, let them say it. It tends to be a situation can be resolved. And that's just a great thing all around. But unfortunately, the spirit is trying to contact you at first by standing in front of you, maybe waving its hands. You can't see it. So what else does it do? It might cause breezes. but that will end up snowballing into objects moving, or you being touched, as in a, hey, 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 I'm here. And yet the way that that's interpreted is, I've got a poltergeist and something tried to prod me and hurt me. And this quite often is your grandparents or something, just trying to say, hey, I'm here. So yeah, it's a lot of misinterpretation of, oh, these are evil spirits, these are demons. Nonsense. It's normally previous tenant or somebody you know anyway. So be kind to the people haunting your house. Show them a little bit of love. Well, that's it for now, and I look forward to speaking to you again in the future.
Thank you for that excellent segment, Chris. Thank you again for always contributing to the podcast with some great, great information. And I definitely agree with him on that. You know, you don't want to upset the spirits that are in your, even your house. I mean, it might have been their house previously, you know, and the fact is that they're not here for our amusement. You know, they're here for other reasons, and they're not here, oh, give me a sign here, give me a sign there, oh, you know, show yourself, all that stuff. Listen, they're not trained donkeys or whatever, you know. But yeah, so just have respect, that's all. Have respect for the living and the deceased. You know what I'm saying? But now we are on to some cryptid zoo. In today's episode, we're going to be talking about the Mongolian death worm. So now let's talk about this thing, right? It's the elusive Mongolian death worm. This red fellow's Mongolian name translates to the large intestine worm and is said to roam the Gobi Desert. He was first brought to Western attention by author paleontologist Roy Chapman Andrews' 1926 book, On the Trail of Ancient Man. Roy had never seen this creature, but the locals spoke of it constantly. In 1922, the Mongolian Prime Minister described the worm, saying it is shaped like a sausage about 2 feet long, has no head nor legs, and it is so poisonous that merely to touch it means instant death. Mongolian legend, which described the creature as traveling underground, creating waves of sand on the surface, which allows it to be detected. It is said it can kill at a distance, either by spraying a venom at its prey or by means of electrical discharge. It primarily lives and burrows underground, only rarely coming to the surface. The only evidence for this creature had been sightings and stories from the locals. No photographs or remains had ever been found. The Mongolian death worm hibernates for 10 months of the year. It only emerges during June and July. Aside from humans, the Mongolian death worm preys on camels. It will leave eggs inside of the animal's intestines, which will eventually turn the camel the same shade of red as this creature. Some people believe before the Mongolian death worm attacks, it will raise half of its body from the sand and inflate until it explodes, which is when lethal poison is sprayed across the victim. Experts claim the desert is too hot for actual worms to survive, which leads them to believe that the Mongolian death worm is a venomous snake or a legless burrowing lizard. Although most people claim the Mongolian death worm does not have a mouth, others argue the creature does have a mouth that is able to open exceptionally wide to bear its rows of sharp, inward-pointing teeth. Because of the lack of hard evidence, the Mongolian death worm is widely accepted as being just a legend. Russian scientists allegedly uncovered a dead specimen in 1972, but this specimen disappeared and is rumored to be hidden inside of a basement of a Russian museum. There was a movie called The Mongolian Death Worm, which came out in 2010, starring Sean Patrick Flannery and Victoria Pratt. And many documentaries which tried to catch a glimpse of this monster, but they all came up empty-handed. If you look at some of the drawings of this thing, when it shows its mouth open wide and its teeth, it actually resembles the Demogorgon from Stranger Things. But yeah, guys, so that's my cryptid zoo segment. This thing sounds absolutely terrifying if it's the real deal. It's kind of a shame that there's no real evidence with it. only, you know, local lore, but I mean, it's quite a story that a lot of these locals over there talk about this thing. So there's got to be some kind of truth to it, right? All right. So now on to one of my favorite segments. And actually, it seems to be getting quite a bit of play. A lot of people seem to like this segment, probably the most of all my segments. But this one is entitled Haunted eBay. So the first item we're going to look at is, if you guys remember the haunted chicken nugget that I talked about recently, this one might be a good snack afterwards. This is the haunted, cursed, 22-year-old dried-out orange. And in capital letters, it says, must remain refrigerated. The starting bid is $500, or you could buy it now for $1,000, which that's quite an expensive orange. Oh, but it is free shipping, so that's just terrific. And it's from Wycliffe, Ohio. Wycliffe? Wycliffe? Something like that. Sorry if I'm mispronouncing. Anyway, what you are bidding on is a haunted, cursed, 22-year-old dried-out orange. It must remain refrigerated. It will be shipped in a smaller cooler with ice packs. I have no way to prove this, of course, so all I can do is tell you my story. I remember shopping and getting some produce. I usually don't like oranges, but as I walked by the fruit table, I reached out and grabbed one. I thought to myself, why not get some more? But then I found myself saying that one was enough. I brought my groceries home, unpacked, and put them all away. I put the orange on the lowest rack of the fridge, and for whatever reason, overnight, it had rolled to the back of the fridge, under the deli drawer, and out of sight. I mean, it's round, right? So it could roll. But anyway, since I didn't like oranges, I forgot about it for a few weeks. Why would you buy even one if you don't like oranges? Okay, a few months. Hey, I'm a single guy and we don't clean the fridge out very often. The day that I cleaned it was when I found the orange. I remember laughing and realizing that it was probably no good anymore, so I tossed it into the trash. That's when the bad luck started. The next morning, my alarm didn't go off. The timer of my coffee pot malfunctioned, and when I finally got outside to rush for work, I had a flat tire. Now, nothing at this point gave me an indication that the orange had anything to do with this bad luck, but still, I couldn't take my mind off of it. I wish I could tell you that I witnessed something supernatural happen, thus giving credence to my story, but I cannot. I had no proof, just a feeling. With that, I found myself taking the orange out of the trash, and I put it in the sink. It sat there for 3 days, and my short string of bad luck continued. A pipe burst, I came down with a horrible flu, and found out that a loved one was in a horrible car accident. She's okay, by the way. I do believe in ghosts, spirits, and demons. I believe in supernatural and occult phenomena. I guess that's why I put the orange back into the refrigerator in the sealed crisper drawer. There it sat for 22 years. My friends make fun of me, but all I know is that since it has been there, my bad luck has stopped almost completely. Sure, I have a few bad things happen now and then, but nothing out of the ordinary like all those years ago. I wish I could offer some proof, but I cannot. I am moving soon and have decided to get rid of it once and for all. I'm hoping that there is a ghost hunter or collector willing to take on this curse. I've come to the conclusion that as long as I keep it cooled down, it keeps the demon or whatever it is at bay. There's no returns. I do not want this anymore. Thank you. All right, so the next and actually last item for this week's Haunted eBay segment is a vintage clown doll, Leo, homeless, tragic, disruptive, and dark haunted collection. He's going for $75. Shipping is $15, coming from Old Bridge, New Jersey. So the vessel, which is a doll, is a vintage rubber clown doll, approximately 13 inches tall. In life, Leo couldn't catch a break. He was known as a tramp or transient in the areas he frequented. Some locals felt sorry for him and would leave him food or old clothes. He was thought to be harmless, though no one really knew his background. Rumor was that he had once been a wealthy man, but lost his business and family and wandered homeless in various parts of the city, depending on the season and what shelter he could find. Sometimes, he would have brief conversations with people, and overall was considered harmless and unfortunate. Other times, he would be harassed by youngsters and even on rare occasions beaten up. However, his was a familiar sad face, but for many years and over time, he took to drink as his only comfort. We believe there is more to his past than a brief investigation uncovered, but even this was conducted so long ago, the facts have been blurred. When he was found dead in an old tenement, there was no official report or police investigation done. Death was put down to natural causes or exposure, though some felt it may have been homicide. Leo chose this vessel after a series of paranormal events were recorded in an adjoining property. Leo is still depressed and can also turn disruptive if ignored. Sometimes he needs to talk and does well with the Ouija board, pendulum, and also physical or psychical raps and audible noises. Objects have turned up, lost, or broken, so please use caution as we cannot guarantee the info provided is completely true. Some get a very unsettled feeling around him that he is not as harmless as believed. Please examine his photos carefully and make your decision according to your own impressions. We cannot be responsible if this entity connected with Leo is something darker than he wants us to believe. So, yeah, that's my haunted eBay segment. Listen, guys, if you're going to bid on any of this stuff, the Warped Reality Podcast or Ghost Joe here, I do not take responsibility if you're going to buy this stuff and weird stuff happens, weird stuff don't happen, paranormal or what. And yeah, so, but happy bidding if you're going to get this. And if you have a haunted item that you would love to talk to me about, you know the number, you know my email. Please get in contact with me. I may even want you to be on the show. I'm always looking for guests for the show as well. If you are a paranormal researcher or just an enthusiast or somebody that's had plenty of experiences, a psychic, medium, or anything in that matter, I would love to speak to you on the podcast. So please get in touch with me. All right, guys. Now I am very, very pleased to announce my newest segment called Tiny Terrifying Tales. It's basically a short haunted horror story, weird, whatever. And I'm going to narrate it. I may have other people narrating it as well. And this one was written by myself, Ghost Joe. But I am going to have other people's written stuff, especially my buddy Nat, who's a longtime listener of this podcast. He's going to be the main writer for these short stories, and I can't wait for you guys to hear that stuff as well. And also, by the way, guys, I seem to get a lot of my friends involved in my podcast, which I think is great. You know, a lot of them are my high school buddies. Edgegrave Dave, as you guys know, has been my longtime friend since I was 10 years old. And if you guys didn't know, the artwork that you're seeing for this episode and the artwork for my logo and everything was done by my buddy Steve, who is also a high school friend. So yeah, guys. But without further ado, here's Tiny Terrifying Tales.
Now it's time for Tiny Terrifying Tales.
This story starts on a seemingly normal night's drive down a dark highway, but for one man, it's going to get a whole lot brighter. Mark was an ordinary middle-aged guy going about his normal routine. He worked the graveyard shift as a security guard in a large factory downtown. This situation had never bothered him, as he is single with no children. At least none that he knows of. This night started just as every other had. He gassed up his car and had gotten his much-needed large coffee, black with three sugars, of course. Then it was off to the highway for his 50-mile drive to work. About halfway through his commute, all signs of civilization had faded away. It seems darker than usual, he thought. Singing and air drumming to his favorite classic rock tunes on the radio, he was startled by an enormous boom. He looked around concerned at what had made the noise, but he didn't see anything. As his heart was finally slowing, Mark continued to focus on the horizon up ahead. Wait, Mark sees something. A strange blue, ominous glow was lighting the sky ahead. Although growing more hesitant, Mark kept driving. Silence. He had just realized that all noise seemed to have vanished. He began to hum a quick tune just to make sure he hadn't lost his hearing. It was at this point that Mark noticed that his radio was having some sort of interference. Along with the growing static noise, he began to feel his car pulling forward, as if there was a giant magnet up ahead. His anxiety started to grow. "What the hell is going on?" he said aloud to himself. By this point, Mark wasn't even holding on to the steering wheel anymore. The magnetic force was getting stronger, and his car was moving faster and faster. The car rounded a right curve. Then, just beyond the trees, he sees it. There, a few hundred feet away, was a massive disc-shaped flying object. Mark had never been so scared in his life. He frantically stomped on his brakes, but it was no use. He was no longer in control, if he had ever been before. The car entered the bright blue glow. It stops, then shuts off. He hears the familiar sound of his doors unlocking, but for some reason, he didn't run. A calm now came over him. His fear seemed to dissipate. But deep down, he knew he should be screaming. Mark then exits his car. He stands underneath the gigantic, otherworldly aircraft. As he looks up, he sees a large opening starting to form from just above him. As the bright blue light encased him, he could almost feel the light protruding through his body. He catches a glimpse of a figure looking down on him. It was just as others had described. Slender body, elongated head with dark black bulging eyes. Then, just as he may have had the nerve to say something, a bright white light shot out of the ship towards Mark. The next morning, the local sheriff's department found Mark's abandoned car in the middle of the road, but there was no Mark. In fact, when they checked who had owned the car, there was no record of Mark. It was as if he was erased from existence. So what do you think? Was Mark vaporized? Was he abducted? Or maybe Mark was finished with his long mission and was finally returning home.
So, I hope you guys enjoyed my new segment, Tiny Terrifying Tales. And my announcer guy there, that was pretty cool, right? Crypt Keeper? Actually, he's not the Crypt Keeper. Because then I'd probably get sued. And I'm not making any money off of this podcast, so that would not be very good now, would it? But I hope you guys enjoyed that. And that's the end of my Halloween episode show. I hope you enjoyed it. Thank you to all of my people that helped me out. Chris Whitehouse of the White House Investigation Team, Ed Grave Dave, my good friend. What the hell am I? I'm tired, guys. Do you understand? I am tired. Thank you to Steve also for doing the artwork, and I hope he continues to do the artwork for me. And yeah, guys, so that's it for the Halloween episode. Thank you so much. I have some interviews coming your way as well very, very soon. If I could find the time to actually edit them, that would be amazing. And yeah, so have a great night, everybody. And that's it. You could forget to change your shorts. No, it's fine. I don't think I'm going to say that anymore, because I don't even know if I even really know what the hell I'm talking about there. And if I'm confusing my own self and I'm kind of weird, that's not pretty good. That's not very good at all. And yes, I am very tired. But anyway, thank you guys and have a great night.
Thank you for listening to the Warped Reality Podcast. And thank you to all my guests and contributors that helped make this show possible. For more episodes, guest info, social media links, merch, and more, please check out warpedrealitypodcast.com. If you have a paranormal experience you would like to share, questions, comments, or you'd like to be a guest on the show, please leave me a voicemail at 845-600-0744, or you can email me at ghostjoeny@gmail.com. You can do so anonymously if you'd like. Also, I'd greatly appreciate it if you could leave me a review on Apple Podcasts or WarpRealityPodcast.com. Have a great night, everyone, and don't forget to change your shorts.